It's time for the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Now here's Jake.
Welcome back, everybody. Rural Matters, Jake Apsma with you. Always an honor and a privilege right here in almost the heart of Salem, the heart capital of the state of Oregon, and right here at 1430 AM KYKN. And I am coming up on 4 years of doing this program, and I feel 100% blessed doing it. We are just coming past the D-Day commemoration. We've just come past Memorial Days. And I feel like when we, between those and then the 4th of July, and especially this 4th of July coming up, just tremendous. What a country we live in. And I'm so happy to bring on John Swanson. John, you had a tough couple of weeks. You won that Polk County Commissioner's position, seat number 2, handily. And then if that wasn't hard enough on you, you spent some time in Hawaii. Wow.
And I don't want to give anyone the impression that that's a normal occurrence. I hadn't been to Hawaii since I was in middle school.
Wow.
Almost 30 years ago.
Much needed break.
So let's not give everyone the impression that that's me every other week or something.
Well, Hunter and I are blinded by your tan. honestly, John Swanson, welcome to the program, and congrats on your position now.
Thank you.
As Polk County Commissioner in position 2. Before we talk about what got you into politics, talk a little bit about what exactly is a commissioner at all, and as Polk County Commissioner position number 2, how many commissioners are you going to be working with?
There's a total of 3 positions. I mean, I get asked that question, and it's harder to explain than you think. The simplest way to put it is think of a mayor and think of a city council, and it's local government, and you basically have legislative and executive authority. I mean, you are essentially, if a citizen lives in county land, only county, you are the governing body. For that respective citizen, if someone lives in, let's say, West Salem or Monmouth, you're still helpful, but it's more tangential.
Sure. So tangential. A lot of funding goes through the 3 of you.
Right.
You're going to look at roads. Is that structure? Is that the basic part of your job as a commissioner? Like when you look at your day, how's your day going to look when you get to the office with your other 2 colleagues? How does that work? How does that look?
Well, I mean, as you ask that, there's a lot of day to day that I'm kind of just finding out. Yeah. I mean, I entered the campaign last summer and chose to run kind of with my own goals in mind, economic development and improving road infrastructure and saving taxpayers money. And, you know, some of those day-to-day questions, you'd be surprised how kind of tight-knit it can be. It's not like anyone's hiding it, but it's like just today specifically, I was over for the first time meeting with the county administrator, Greg Hansen, and we were just discussing kind of the lay of the land, like how swearing in will look. January 4th, it would be the day I'm sworn in.
Wonderful.
Which is a long ways from now.
Yeah, it's a blink.
But
it's a blink.
But just as I'm there, you know, the conversation began to take place because county commissioners tend, there's reasons for this, partly because of just public meeting laws. Commissioners tend to take on their own lanes.
Okay.
All right. So if you're thinking, you know, just human services level, that's something Commissioner Jeremy Gordon's that's been his lane. If it's public works, transportation in Polk County, that's Commissioner Mordhorst. That's his lane. If it's, you know, public safety, fairgrounds, you know, forestry, a bunch of other stuff, that's Commissioner Pope's lane.
Yep.
And those aren't formal. That's just kind of there's sort of a general understanding.
Are you trying to say you're playing to your commissioner strength, if you will? I mean, like you say, lane. I'm really good at this. Right?
Yeah. And honestly, to answer that question, it's really going to be kind of finding out over the summer and fall and interactions with the commissioners I'm going to be working with, you know, where I'm best fit.
Yeah.
I mean, just coming into this right at face value, I mean, it was a huge campaign issue for me. It was saving the fairgrounds in Polk County.
We're going to talk about that a little later.
And I do see that as a natural pathway for me, but I don't think I'm ready at this point to just say, that's mine. I mean, those conversations are more in the future.
Right on. Yeah. I appreciate that. I really do, John. Let's go back a little bit. You spent a fair amount of time, Bruce Starr.
Yeah.
State Senator, as his chief of staff. Why don't you bring us up to that point? What got you all the way over there? And we can talk about your time in the Capitol. Yeah. I think people need to know that about you.
Yeah, sure. I mean, from a timeline perspective, just to really rewind the clock back, you know, I grew up in Southern Oregon. I worked in a plywood mill to help pay my way through college, and that college was Willamette.
Okay.
So I worked summer swing shift and in the mill, and while I was a student at Willamette, I spent a lot of time kind of got involved early working in the legislature, kind of the internship programs that
Willamette
has.
What was your major at Willamette?
It was politics.
Yeah. You're going to a good school for that.
I mean, I suppose.
FYI, my sister graduated out of Willamette, and she did real well out of there.
All right.
Yeah, you and I can talk about that sometime. But seriously, politics. Okay, go ahead.
Well, honestly, my experience, I checked all the boxes academically, but I don't think I was some kind of grand slam hitter of a student. I spent a lot of time in the legislature, and that's where kind of my wherewithal sort of became. And I knew Senator Bruce Starr at that point, because he was actually representing Hillsborough at the time.
And his father, I believe Chuck? Charles?
Yeah, Charles is what he went
by.
Yeah,
I mean, he recently passed away.
6 years
ago almost.
No, he just passed.
Yeah, gotcha.
A couple months ago.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So there's a family connection between him and his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, anyway, I knew him, but it was kind of other offices I served in, and the longest tenure was with Senator Chuck Thompson, 12 years. So a lot of folks still kind of recognize, you know, this, within the Capitol, you know, that's a common question. How's Chuck doing? So,
wow.
So you're in your
college years, and you're working in the legislature a bit. What are you seeing? What does this start whetting your appetite for it?
I mean, it's a complicated question.
Sure.
I don't think it was some sort of obsession, but I grew to have a passion and just the years seemed to have ticked by, and I just kind of got better and better. You know, I'm programmed into kind of the campaign sector as well. Just like any career, you know, that was 21 years ago I just started. And the reason I kind of got plugged in with Senator Starr is Brian Boquist.
We had him on the program a year and a half ago.
He's awesome.
Oh my gosh.
And, so he couldn't run again.
Yeah, he kind of got kicked out, if you will, because of the what was the walkout back, a few years ago with that whole thing. And quite honestly, I give him credit for standing up.
Yeah,
people
may
not like that.
We have had to really raise the bar on how to negotiating and being able to make lemonade out of lemons in that legislature. Just with the way it's gone in the last decade.
Yeah.
But those walkouts were a component of something that I think it's a little less likely we're going to see walkouts going forward. But, you know, we figure out other ways to gain leverage. Most recently, it was the referendum on the gas tax.
That was amazing.
Which, just like, similar to the walkouts, you can take each at face value, but from my perspective, it's sort of the final stage of a negotiation that never worked out.
Yeah.
So when you have, you know, a supermajority on the other side that isn't meaningfully working with you, you know, here and there they want your votes, but you're not getting anything you can go back to your district with of substance.
Yeah.
you're never going to come to an agreement. And that's what you saw that with cap and trade, and you're seeing that's what generated those walkouts.
We're going to talk about that in the next segment, because you brought it up, because that hit me with the way back walkout. Keep going. We've got less than a minute. Go for it.
But I mean, just the larger theme we're touching on is that you know, we've really had to be strategic as a minority in the legislature. And like, honestly, the high hope is that we can come to the table and negotiate in good faith.
Yeah.
And that will trickle out and help rural Oregon. Because right now, it's a very underrepresented part of our state.
That kind of brought my program to life, the cap and trade, because, John, I think I shared with you, I'm a ex-dairy farmer east of Mount Angel.
Yes.
And we finally called it 6 years ago. That was like we were done completely, everything gone. And we're going to talk about that. John Swanson, newly elected Polk County Commissioner number 2, Jake Rural Matters. Going to be right back after this. We got to keep going.
Back to the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Jake Rural Matters back with you. In an incredible time to be in Oregon, in Salem, in America. I'm excited. Our best days, John Swanson, you're way younger than me. Maybe I'll let you know later. But you got to sit there and say to yourself, as we reflect on July 4th or the recent 82-year commemoration of D-Day, Memorial Day in front of that, hey, the best days of our country, we got to look like it's going to get better. We've got to be optimistic, right? What do you think?
I'm totally with you.
Right on.
I'm totally with you.
Good. You brought up something, that was the cap and trade, talking about the walkout, not the last one, but 019, I believe, is what comes to my mind there. And for those that don't remember, it had to do with emissions from diesel tractors. I mean, I'm going to just really cut to the chase here. Had that walkout not occurred to mess up the quorum, it would have broke our farm.
Yeah.
Honestly, so talk a little bit about it. Well, you can remember. We don't have to dwell on it too long.
I was part of it every step of the way.
Brian Boquist was.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, at that particular session, Herman Barrett Sugar was our Senate Republican caucus leader, and so many of the folks involved have stepped away since then. I mean, that particular issue that a lot of people forget, and it's like this theme that, you know, that we've already addressed, which is you have a negotiation, and then when those across the table are not honest brokers, like you turn into kind of a cornered animal, and you have to resort to more drastic measures. What had occurred with that cap and trade there's a couple nuances huge.
Yeah.
That are forgotten. But Cliff Bentz, remember, he's a congressman now, but he was the state senator from Eastern Oregon. You know, he was sort of the Republican negotiator on cap and trade. And the hope was to come up with something similar to the Washington model. Because remember, we're working in a world where...
You mean Washington State?
Yeah, Washington State.
Yep.
We're working in a world where... okay, this is going to happen, and so the hope at the time was to come up with something palatable that wouldn't just eradicate farming, and you know, like you as a dairy farmer past, something that businesses could actually handle and something that was palatable. But they just kicked him out of the room, and it was just kind of a lot of left wing organizations that drove the bus. And you know, when like I said, when you have a table that those on across the side aren't going to work with you, like why play ball? That's what facilitated the need to walk out, and it was the right call. But something you have to remember is that while a success was won, you had Kate Brown's executive order where she said revenge is best served cold and slow. And we're living under that. We're seeing the first trickle that's starting now and is going to continue on through 2035, which is which is, think of a vacuum cleaner sucking up, you know, who they deem to be polluters, you know, what a committee deems to be polluters, you know, like farmers. Yeah. And you're just going to see this gradual, you know, we calculate it to be $1.2 billion a biennium. That's essentially a tax, a pollution tax. But it was passed via executive order. And that was Kate Brown's executive order. A lot of people forget that because I think it's like there's something in the human consciousness. You want to declare victory, but I mean, we're still living under, we're not living under cap and trade. We're living under cap right now. And so the climate protection program is what it's called. And it's just going to wreak havoc on the middle class. Because the money is now instead of getting pumped into the private sector, it's basically going to go to a lot of NGOs.
Oh my gosh. And that's just going to be so efficient, right?
Right.
I mean, my gosh, you know, I want to thank you guys. Can I say posthumously?
Oh, sure.
Almost, for that move.
Sure.
Because I remember at that time, that summer, and, you know, the legislative session was going on, and my older brother's going to me, boy, if they do that again, we can't be here. And so that was a move that was part of a nail in my farm coffin. And it's not the whole reason. I'm not going to sit there and blame our model wasn't working. Get big or get out, or get a niche market. And you know, the organic dairy world is doing phenomenal in Oregon right now, as far as I know. I mean, it almost is like, wow, we missed that boat. But that cap and trade and the realization of almost in a sense how the government can literally turn against its rural people, its rural farmers. And, you know, John, to you being where you're going to be in Polk County, which is huge ag area with the grass seed and other, you know,
prices got to get better.
Well, they have too much of it. You know, they're just storing it, and you know, but they got to keep doing with what they do. But there was another thing that came on later, and from you mentioned Washington State, and I wrote this down. Governor Jay Inslee was governor at the same time, I believe, as Kate Brown, and to the farmers in Washington State, particularly the one that bought my herd out in Yakima. They brought out, the Washington State brought out this whole overtime tax.
Yeah.
Fine, do an overtime tax, but they went retro. They wanted to charge farmers 3 years prior to. In other words, here's the goalpost, but guess what? We're going to move it now well after the fact. And fortunately, that was put down, but at an extreme cost to the farmers who do not have that kind of money.
I mean, I don't know where to begin on that, but I just look at it as the big picture. I mean, as these regulations crack down, as the look at California, how you've seen just this move towards corporate farms. That's what you're going to see here.
Sure.
Because every time the legislature meets, the average farmer needs 200 more acres, you know, in order to break even than the prior session. And it's just a frustrating kind of spiral.
Correct.
for rural Oregon.
Correct. You know, in getting your position with Polk County, we've got a couple minutes here for this segment. John, did you get a chance to visit with a lot of farmers? What at all? I don't want to put you on the spot here, but if you had, or if you did, what are they telling you?
I mean, I think it's, I just know a lot of farmers.
Yeah, what are they telling you?
I mean, early on, I mean, one of my biggest base of supports was the Polk County Farm Bureau.
Sure.
And I mean,
great organization.
I mean, there's some land use questions. We've already hit on the biggest, which is just the cost of doing business and how it just gets harder and harder and harder. And, you know, it's a little more complicated for a county commissioner. But generally speaking, like preserving our rural heritage, like that's why I'm on board with saving the fairgrounds.
Right on.
You know, opportunities that exist for kids to grow up
FFA
with, yeah, I mean, oh 4-H. My goodness, and those are two things I didn't. I did Cub Scouts when I was little, and, yeah. and I am a den leader myself. But
I am tying a lot of knots. Yeah, are you?
but I am definitely going to push my kids to do FFA.
Good.
I mean, it's really been like later in life because I wasn't exposed to it at a young age. How valuable I think it is just in the business world.
Yeah.
The training it gives you and. To lose the fairgrounds would just be a huge loss just culturally.
And we're going to talk about that in the next segment, John, because it's very important what's going on in Rick Reel, therefore the Polk County Fair. And while we're on the topic, I think my program is going to be over at Marion County Fair here right after the 4th, so I might as well plug that. We're working on that. And we will be over in Rick Reel as well doing that fair too, because it is. And Polk County Fair, and we'll end with this, John, for this segment, it's having some difficulties. It's yep. always funding and the age of the facility. Mm-hmm. Got 10 seconds. What do you think?
Well, you're right. I mean, it's definitely sustained, but there are fixed costs. You know, the building, the electrical work. There's just it's deferred maintenance is sure. what, and that just keeps growing like a bubble every year that nothing's done. So they've been able to maintain operations, but there are some big costs that have to be figured out ASAP.
Right on, John Swanson, Polk County Commissioner, Jake Real Matters. Hang on, news. Some other stuff. We'll be right back.
The conversation continues on the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters of 1430 KYKN.
Jake, Rural Matters, glorious Friday to you all. I think we're going to have a dry summer, you guys. I feel like our weather pattern's like 3 weeks ahead of schedule as far as high pressure Oregon going into summer, yada, yada, yada. I'm not a weather person as far as it goes predictability-wise, but I've been here long enough. With that said, my farming buddies got their tractors revved up. Please, please be benevolent to them on the road. Don't. They want to get where they got to go. You want to get where you want to go. They're just trying to feed you. And if you eat, it's an old phrase, you're involved in agriculture, like it or not. I don't know what else you're living off of. I'm so happy. John Swanson, your new position coming up in the new year. As you start learning about osmosis-wise what you're going to be doing as a commissioner in Polk County. So let's go ahead and continue with the fair. What do you see that needs to be done as far as you know right now? What would you like to see happen? And can we keep this fair? Because it's not only just a fair, it's also a shelter for emergency,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So go ahead.
Huge public safety
yeah,
value.
Yeah, we need to talk about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's the evacuation hub for all of Polk County. I mean, and that's less discussed. I think anything like a lot of public safety issues, you only really want it when you need it. You only really care about it when you need it. And you know, it can be a tough sell to voters. And, you know, there's examples of other levies in Polk County that haven't passed. And there's a variety of reasons why. But like keeping that building functional does have a significant like, public safety value, and I mean that's the reason why, you know, you'll hear solution conversations sure. like public private partnership, you know, different, you know, ways may rope in the business community to sponsor things, and you know I've heard some steering committee ideas yeah. like ways to, you know. Run it a little more like a business, although I think they do a pretty good job. You know, I think it's a good team that runs the fair. But the most compelling reason to me on why it's important to go out for a levy is because of the public safety value. And that's something the private sector can't really pony up for.
Right. Okay.
So
yeah.
But that being said, you know, to make it a successful fairgrounds and have a robust fair itself, you know, on par with other counties, I do think some level of an upgrade past a levy is necessary. And you know, I really don't want to speak out of turn because I think there's a lot of moving parts, but. I think there are opportunities in each building you know, naming rights and
yeah, you could put banners of some kind or some sort of this.
Well, there are banners. Or,
yeah,
there are banners. There are certainly our sponsors already.
Sure.
It's just, well, we got to get the levy done first because I don't think anything happens without that initial.
Can you talk about like ETA on the levy or how's where's that at right
well,
now?
Well, the commissioners. Again, I'm kind of in a unique spot being that while I'm a I won't be sworn in till January.
Yeah.
But you know, I am starting to, you know, get a lot more immersed over at the county. I'm going off on a tangent here, but I was told today something that I hadn't known yet. I hadn't thought of it, but there has never been a Polk County commissioner who isn't already an incumbent that has won in May.
Oh, okay.
So, and it's because it became nonpartisan,
right?
In 2012.
Yeah,
it was partisan before that. Partisan elections are typically decided in November.
Yeah,
and nonpartisan races, you usually have a runoff that goes to November between top two.
Yeah, we get spared the agony of another type of runoff, huh?
So just all these factors and the fact that they've appointed commissioners too.
Yeah.
So that's its own. I'm the first ever that is like, okay, it's June right now.
Yeah.
I get sworn in January. What do I do in between?
Well,
and one of those things I've chosen to do is campaign for the fairgrounds.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that because I know it's on for this year, and it needs to even for. Oh, this will be my third hit out there if everything goes to fruition between Marion and Polk. And then Hunter, my producer, we've done a rodeo here at the State Fairgrounds, which I think is in October this year. But the young people.
Yes.
They don't have any transgender issues over there. I'm sorry, I got to say, and neither do the animals. They know who they are, and the young people know who they are. They're full energy and off energy drinks, I might add. But I've said it before. We need to keep those FFAs, those 4-H programs, those grassroots kind of. This is where your food comes from. This is animal stuff. I want to talk to you real briefly and ask you real briefly. That there is that bill that's coming out. I don't have the number in front of me that wants to just get rid of hunting, fishing.
Ugh.
And I mean, where does this come from? You've lived in the Capitol.
Yeah.
Where does this come from, John?
Well, I mean, I'll first address the legalization of hard drugs. I mean, when you have billionaires from other states that get a wild idea and want to experiment with it, you know, because you can do a lot in the referendum and initiative process. I mean, you don't need it's basically an extension of the legislative branch, like in statute, you know, or in our Constitution, it is equal to the legislature in value when you pass an initiative. And in Oregon, it's comparatively cheap to do that.
Okay.
And overall, that's good. Overall, that's worked in our favor. It's not an initiative, but the referendum, you know, the signatures required, like for the gas tax.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times where you want that low barrier. I think it's in the interest of just the people of Oregon to retain that low barrier. But what you do get is and it seems like every cycle, there's something that gets very well funded, not from anyone in Oregon. And what they're doing is they're just testing the waters to see how palatable this idea is.
Again, Oregon becomes we become the guinea pig.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that happening?
The petri dish.
Yeah,
yes.
There you go.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so we knock that gas tax down like lickety split.
You're darn right.
There's a lot of people that are very concerned about this bill. I know how many. I mean, you got to know tons.
Yeah.
Not only farmers, but hunters and fishers and recreation. Do people really think this through? Where, God, I tell you what, I pray this.
There is no
through.
Mental gymnastics you can do to legitimize it. It is like, don't even try. It is so dangerous. I mean, it's really just a middle finger at people.
It is.
Like, where do you think your food comes from?
That's why I got this program.
And you do have a segment, 15, maybe 10 to 15, maybe more in some counties, like Multnomah, that that just think food appears in the grocery aisle.
Costco, Fred Meyer. Hey, is Multnomah County?
And, I mean, just let's like walk this through to the nth degree, though. I mean, yeah. I mean, what if they did get their utopian paradise and banned all animal killing in Oregon? You're just driving up prices in Oregon.
Oh yeah,
you're just giving greater market share to other areas, other countries, and that's just the story of regulation in this state.
Yeah,
I mean, every time you pass a regulation that just lifts the hurdle a little more and lifts the price a little more, because price is the main driver of what makes a consumer buy something.
Yeah.
So the higher you make that price, the more China's just raking it in.
Well, you're bringing up a topic that I want to talk with you at a later time, because foreign interference, foreign investment, and strategically where they are is something I want to visit with you at a better time. But we've got less than a minute for this segment. Tell me this bill isn't going to pass. What do you think? What are you thinking?
I don't see a pathway myself. Yeah. I think there's enough.
Cooler heads prevail.
I mean, what I'd be more scared of is it's not necessarily a win that it doesn't pass.
Yeah.
You don't want certain legislators saying, "Ooh, I like this aspect. Let's take all these
cherry pick."
I'm putting air quotes up right now. You can totally see them saying, "Let's take all these good aspects of IP28 and put it in a bill."
Yeah. Yeah, like there is any.
There
at
is
all.
Nothing good in there.
Oh my gosh! We'll end it right there on that one, John Swanson. Man, I'm having a great time here. Jake, Rural Matters. John, of course, just elected Polk County Commissioner, point number two, position number two. Yep. We'll be right back.
Back to the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Jake, Rural Matters, back with you. I know I say it every week. I'm going to say it again, man. Fastest week of my life when I do this program. Because, John Swanson, I do private security. And that's a hurry up and wait. And you get to certain places, you just got to cover your route. And it's like, okay, so far so good, nothing going on. And homeless in McMinnville is quite a problem. That's where we're at. And the city has been really good to our company to help us work that out. You're going to be a county commissioner stuff. But how much commingling with county commission agendas going with, let's say, the city of Independence, Monmouth, how much going back and forth are you going to be, or your colleagues do? Is that going to be a lane that you're going to look at when talking about what we were talking about earlier?
I think no matter what lane you're in, no matter the commissioner, you should be outward focused and meeting with elected officials in all respective communities of a county. I mean, that just goes with the. That just goes with the job, and that's important.
Sure.
And, you know, along the way, like throughout my campaign, there's folks I really got to know. There's folks I haven't, and for whatever reason. And I'm really trying to, spend the next couple months making sure I've covered each base and that I've sat down and met with those local leaders, who I haven't had the chance to really get to know.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that. I'm excited. But also, just to continue on, it isn't just other local leaders. It helps to be a unified block when we're kind of walking through the halls of the Oregon legislature, trying to press for what our needs are. It's important to have relationships above you too.
Right.
I think I come in, that's probably the biggest thing I have going for me is just the relationships I have from my state line of work.
You know, let's dovetail to that. Let's go back. Your time with Senator Starr. And so do you come up to him and say, hey, did he encourage you to do this? Or was this
guy? Oh, it was Anna Sharp.
We had her on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talking about a farmer.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. She did.
Yeah. I mean, it was her idea.
For you to do
this.
Yeah.
We were just talking about local, like who's running, who's not. And I was like, well, I heard Craig Pope's retiring. Do you know of anyone? And I wasn't thinking me. I totally give her credit. She gave me the idea.
Yeah, she's out in Amity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she lives pretty close to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, by rural miles. Yeah. We're basically neighbors.
Yeah. I got that. Totally get that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Tremendous farm in and of themselves. They're 1,800, 2,000 acre.
Yeah.
And we had her on, 2 years ago, and no nonsense.
Yeah.
100%.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you're in good company.
So, yeah. But, so she kind of started it, but Bruce has been supportive every step of the way.
What's up? We've got roughly 6-7 minutes. Some of the highlights working with Bruce, and let's talk about too. How can you guys, or even Bruce for that matter, work with our governor? I'm shaking my head sometimes when I look at that lady. What are your highlights of being with chief of staff with Bruce Starr?
Well, I mean, I think it. I have to say. The entire process that led to the successful gas tax referendum, because for me it didn't just start in the late summer like it did for a lot of people. So Senator Starr doesn't just go back to 2017 where that was the last transportation package. He goes back to 2009 and prior. He has so much kind of institutional knowledge as to the process of passing a transportation tax. And the last truly successful one that I think was really well thought out was in 2009. Throughout that, very few people in the Capitol remember, because there aren't very many of us, is that there was always kind of a potential that if it was too high a tax, if it was not palatable to Oregonians, if it just looked like this inside job, that it could get referred.
Yeah.
And, if you look back to 2009, prior to that, there were a lot of successful examples of taxes referred and, in successful initiatives. So if you were to say in 2009, this can get referred, people would say, oh yeah, it can. But fast forward to 2025.
Sure.
The last long session, I was in on a lot of these conversations about the transportation package. Cause remember, that's the high hope. You want to negotiate a package that's fair to all Oregonians to be able to fund roads, fix potholes, pay for maintenance, bridges. There's all kinds of needs. So we all have an interest in getting that done. But Republicans aren't just going to vote for this straight up tax. You're not going to go back to your district and say, look what I did for you.
Yeah, it costs more.
The whole time we knew a referendum was possible. But when you spoke of it, people are like, nah, you couldn't pull it off. You can't do it.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And so that was like January 2025, was when we were kind of hatching like, okay, in a worst case scenario, if we need to refer something, if negotiations go wrong. So that was kind of when the blueprints started to form. Later in session, the conversations definitely went awry, and it definitely became very public later in session that a referendum was possible, and that kind of just a lot of forces kind of converged to basically end any chance of a gas tax coming out of that session.
Well,
and what I'm doing right now is I'm narrating, like you asked me what my highlight is.
Sure thing.
It's this entire year-long process.
Well, it was huge.
Because, eventually it culminated, they in a total party line vote, did that late summer special session, that's when they passed that gas tax. And we referred it pretty quickly, and we were successful.
To the gas situation, you, of course, were in Hawaii, so no prices count out there. Everything's is so, it's kind of off the chart.
Actually, I made a comment in Hawaii, which is supposed to be lopsidedly high.
Yeah.
It was only like 40 cents
really?
Higher than than in Oregon.
God, doesn't that tell you something? Because
that's what I took from it. I'm like, really? Oregon's only 40 cents less?
I think, John, I was back east in the Midwest. I have family in South Dakota, Iowa. And dollar and some change less, whether it's diesel or, all your gases, your fuels. And I think as an Oregonian, when the governor decides that she wants to raise our gas tax, I'm going to ask her, well, what are we getting for this?
Yes.
Because our Are our roads showing the amount of money that we're paying more for better roads? And I'm going to say a big no. Yeah. Your thoughts on that? How are the Hawaiian roads?
First off, well, I'll just say Polk County roads are pretty good as long as you differentiate between state maintained and county maintained.
Okay.
Polk County has very high rated roads.
That, good.
You know, that's a standard I think we need to keep up.
You know, people head to the coast through you.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, no, but they're taking a state road to do it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be Highway 22.
Yep.
But it's absolutely true. We all agree it should be a bipartisan issue that, you know, for a modest gas tax increase here and there, as long as accountability is built into the ODOT model and that, you know, dollars are appropriated fairly. I mean, roads, transportation, it's really that one thing that all sides agree.
It's got to be good.
It has to be. And government, you know, government has to be the entity that pulls it off. It's just we're so far from that now. And
well, it could be so much better because going back to the Midwest, John, how could, like South Dakota, Sioux Falls, okay? How could a state that has, at best, a moderate amount of people in it, at best, have so much action? And I'm just seeing so much vitality, tangible vitality. It is made for the semi-trucks to go through. It is made for the big tractors to go through. Ethanol plant over here, the size of this block that you and I drove by to get here.
Yeah.
We got to do better.
Yeah.
We got to do better then.
Absolutely.
They're doing it.
Absolutely.
And we've got less than a minute in your time with Senator Starr. Is the governor's door open to other people's opinions? I'm curious about that. Real quick, we talk about it some other time.
I mean, they converse pretty regularly.
Yeah,
I'm not in on most of those conversations. It's a pretty one-on-one dialogue. I don't think anyone's 100% shut off from wanting to talk.
Yeah,
but I just am going to turn to what happened up in Hillsboro, where, you know, you had kind of a mainstream Democrat just got primaried by a declared socialist.
That's a big problem.
And so you have within the Democratic Party this pull to move leftward, and you know, any that sends a message to all levels of throughout the legislature and the governor of you know, it's just putting more weight on the scale.
Yep.
You know, to not work with average or to just kind of dismiss half the state.
John, we got to leave it there. Good luck. Excited for you. Great to meet you. And on behalf of this program, thanks for coming down. God bless. Jake, Rural Matters. We'll see you soon.
This has been the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters every Friday at noon on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.